all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north on this Wednesday, May 31st. We are at the last day of May already, 61 degrees up here on the lake, and it's going to be another warm one as some places push past 90 today. A full forecast for the state of Wisconsin from Weatherology coming up in just over an hour. Coming up on the program this morning, our new weekly climate check segment focuses on the Great Lakes. And even though it's going to be a hot day today, we're going to look back at how very little ice cover was on the Great Lakes this past winter, something that's going to make algae blooms worse and indicate some rougher times ahead for these very precious bodies of fresh water. We'll review some of the reaction to the debt ceiling deal, but we'll also talk about other matters involving the Wisconsin congressional delegation. For example, there's one member, Glenn Grothman, who says it's just so hard these days for straight white guys. I mean, they're not getting judgeships the way that they used to. The horror of all of this. How will they get by? In our next hour, the rhetoric versus the reality when it comes to supporting our veterans. For all the flag waving and tough talk that accompanies some political commercials, you'd think certain politicians would have a better record of support for our military and the men and women who wore the uniform, but there's a gulf that's far too often existing between the rhetoric and the reality, and we'll update some of those matters, again, as we look at the debt ceiling deal. We'll also update some big changes coming less than a week from now as Civic Media grows the radio network and its lineup of shows. Some very big changes coming up next Monday. Along the way, as always, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, and you can email us at radio@upnorthnewswi.com. upnorthnewswi.com is where you find all the work that we do on the web from Up North News, a separate entity from Civic Media. But again, our big thanks for them to let Up North News be part of your mornings here on Civic Media radio stations from 6 to 8 in the morning. Aaron Zomers is here from our studio down in Madison. Mr. Zomers, good morning to you.
Good morning, Pat.
You are getting set to be pretty much the last man standing at the current Madison studio before moving to the new stuff. Are there things lying around there right now that you can't believe haven't already been, you know, taken away to Capitol Square at this point?
Surprisingly, no. I definitely would have thought so, but the only thing that falls in that category is just new equipment that's getting delivered here. And then here for like 3 days, and I'm like, wow, they really must not need this yet.
Oh no, they'll need. And at some point, somebody's turning to somebody else, going, "I thought you brought it," and then they got to go all the way back. It kind of reminds me, we had some friends who recently had to go do a memorial service for their elderly parents, the second of whom passed away, and they almost forgot the ashes as they were heading back to another state for the services, and almost. There are some things you just don't want to leave behind. I brought it up because there's things here around my house that don't normally lie around the house being empty nesters, but we've had one of our daughters and a couple of young grandkids around for the past few days. Don't know if you remember this bad boy, but this is one of the silos from the Fisher-Price farm set.
Yeah.
The barn is sitting not too far away. Let's reach into this thing here. We got the Fisher-Price puppy dog. Remember this little fella?
Got
the brown thing with the white spots? And the Fisher-Price cow, I think is a little questionable. It's white with kind of these little brown spots, and I'm not saying that it's a cow that doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist quite like this little fella. But this is what we've been playing with the past few days over here, because Fisher-Price toys last forever.
They sure do. They sure do.
I mean, I've got four grandkids. The second of them is 9 years old. And I remember as like a 2 or 3 year old boy, he was standing on the Fisher-Price Sesame Street parking ramp. And, you know, it's got a little gas station on it and the cars go down the spiral. He's standing on top of it. You think for sure it's going to get crushed. It does not. It's still working with grandkids and great grandkids over at my in-laws' place. I don't know that they make toys that indestructible anymore.
I don't think so. Just based on the toys that with my niece Gracie that we've had, toys that we have from when my older sister was little are still totally fine, mostly Fisher Price stuff. And stuff that she gets now will sometimes be broken in like 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Fisher Price. And the other one, the original Tonka toys that were.
Oh, yeah. I have one of those.
Really made out of metal. Now, of course, the flip side of that on Tonka toys is I don't know how many kids have needed tetanus shots over the years.
Probably a few.
As these things get a little older, they rust a bit, but man, are they are just solid. And so it's been fun having them around. And at some point I'll have to clean all this up and put the toys away when they head back out of state. And it's one of those things, as some folks in the audience can relate, you know, it's both very sad when they go, when you part after, you know, seeing grandkids for a while, but then there's other part of you that says, okay, I get a normal bedtime again. My life goes back to normal. And so it's always, that's the dichotomy of being a grandparent. And I've mentioned before that grandkid number three, who's a four-year-old boy, has loved the Netflix kid show Trash Truck, basically about a big talking trash truck and his best friend, a little boy. Well, it was trash day here yesterday, and you bet your bottom dollar he was excited when I said, you want to see Trash Truck? And now this one doesn't talk, of course, but he thought it was just great. And he's waving at the guy, you know, the trash guy. And trash guy did not want to look at us and wave to the little fella at all.
Really?
He clearly was not a fan of the Netflix cartoon.
I would really have thought that would make his day.
I thought so too. I thought it'd make his day, but you know, it was hot and he's emptying trash and he just wants to get through his day. I understand. We'll do news headlines and more coming up in just a bit. You're up north. It is Corey Hart's birthday, not the former brewer, but the singer who gave us sunglasses at night. And we'll tell you more about the brewers in just a sec. But first, the Up North News daily newsletter is out, comes out into your email boxes about 5 a.m. each morning as we put it together the day before. As you know, we had Christina Loria on yesterday as part of the Uplift, and she mentioned that in the newsletter and on our website would be stories each day of this four-day work week, dividing the state up into four different quadrants and sharing kind of a road trip bucket list, if you will. And Northeast Wisconsin is what's on tap for today. Also in the newsletter, a link to a story about a new package of bills from legislative Republicans related to making it appear as if they're modifying their stance on the 1849 abortion ban, but not really. And we'll chat more about that in our second hour here this morning. And Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz has signed the bill that makes it official, legalizing recreational marijuana in the state of Minnesota, which also makes it official that Wisconsin is an island of prohibition when it comes to marijuana legalization and the loss of funds and all the other effects that come with it. And so you can find all that in the newsletter, as well as the St. Croix Chippewa partner with the Wisconsin DOT to unveil dual language highway signs posted around tribal boundaries and other destinations. So you can read those stories in our newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Time for sports now at 6:17. The Toronto Blue Jays beat the Brewers 7-2 last night. William Contreras hit a two-run home run, his second homer in as many games. But that first inning homer was answered by a four-run first inning for the Jays, and the Brewers have now lost for the fourth time in five games. Adrian Hauser came in and had a career worst 11 hits in just 4 1/3 innings of work. And then on the more positive side of things, the Brewers' new shortstop, Andrew Monasterio, celebrated his 26th birthday with that first big league start after playing 680 minor league games over 9 seasons. But he made it to the bigs at the age of 26 and picked up his first big league hit, a single in the second inning. And then back to the not-so-great news for the Brewers, outfielder Jesse Winker was placed on the 10-day injured list retroactive to May 28th. Infielder Abraham Toro was recalled from AAA Nashville. The Brewers and Blue Jays continue their series in Canada this evening. You can hear that in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM. Around Richland Center, you can catch the Brewers on WRCE News from the Center 107.7 FM 1450 AM. One more sports note. It's not really a sports note, but it was the latest viral video is that Aaron Rodgers is a Swiftie. Of course, Aaron's in New York now playing for the Jets, and there was a video that came out showing him dancing at a Taylor Swift concert, and Aaron Rodgers' biggest defender, Aaron Zomers, was quick to point out, you should let the man have a life. You should dance at a Taylor Swift concert like no one's watching or making a viral video out of you.
However, I am going to rescind that statement if it means I get the title of Aaron Rodgers' biggest defender.
Okay, never mind. I withdraw the comment. Thank you for setting me straight on that. All right, off to headlines here. And, oh, pity the poor straight white men of America. But thankfully, Glenn Grothman is there to defend them. My former legislative colleague is now a member of Congress and continues to be on brand. If there are white males who need to be defended, if there are, what shall we say, non-poor people who need to be defended and what they think about poor people, Glenn Grothman is there for them. And I have two examples of this, some audio clips to play from you. Now, the members of the Wisconsin congressional delegation are being asked, of course, as all members of Congress are, about the debt ceiling agreement that was reached over the weekend. And there's something in there for everybody to dislike, and there's reason in there for everybody to say, okay, well, we avoided a national default. That's a good thing. And as Glenn Grothman was talking about the deal, he, for whatever reason, brought up low-income housing. And, you know, Congressman Grothman is among those in the Republican Party that believe that the real key to economic success in this country is to make poor people poorer and more miserable, because that will get them off their lazy butts and into the workforce, demonstrating no regard for what it is actually like to be truly poor in America. But for Glenn Grothman, it means we've got to crack down on this whole notion of low-income housing.
But they left low-income housing untouched. I think as far as discouraging work and discouraging marriage, I think low-income housing is even a more dangerous program than the food stamps. So I'm including low-income housing in the mix of having work requirements. The amendment as drafted just includes Section 8 housing, which is an error on my part because there are other low-income housings as well. But that's what we have before us. I would appreciate it if you'd let that to the floor, because I don't think our team fought on the low-income housing front at all.
Listen to how he said that our team didn't fight hard enough on low-income housing at all. Now, I come from this with a bit of a bias as somebody who grew up in Section 8 housing. Section 8 housing is not what some people refer to as the projects. Section 8 housing is essentially a voucher. Again, the people who are in favor of voucher schools are not in favor of housing vouchers that keep a roof over the heads of low-income families. They only like vouchers when they benefit people of means. Here, give them more means so they can go to private and religious schools. In Section 8, a housing voucher, essentially lets people rent in other areas, in other places, to people that are willing to accept those housing vouchers. And again, my apologies if we have a bad internet connection. And if I'm being redundant, I'm trying to make sure you catch a couple of points that I'm making here. But Congressman Grothman is again making the point that there shouldn't be this kind of low-income housing. As someone who got out of what was not the roughest neighborhood, but it wasn't a great neighborhood, but was able to move to a suburb and move into a duplex and take pride in that and treat it like your own and treat it well and be able to go to a better school there, you know, the one that was in the suburbs compared to the one in the city where I had been attending, and was able to further my education and was able to meet, you know, more people that way. I understand that there are people who don't treat their housing well if they get housing vouchers, but that also applies to pretty much anybody in the human race that can't seem to keep their corner of the campground cleaner than when they found it. That is no reason to dump on people, like in this case, my mom, who was trying to raise four kids and then three kids because one of the kids was sick all of his life and then he died at the age of nine. But I'm sure Congressman Grothman knows that there must have been some way for her to, you know, as a working single mom with a sick kid, to get a job. And that if you just remove the housing vouchers, that's going to force her into the workforce and spend less time with her kids and shuffle them to doctor appointments and things like that. I'm sure the congressman understands that. Or he does not, because it is so much easier to turn all poor people into lazy villains. But he's too busy defending all those straight white guys out there who, according to him in this next audio clip, are having just the roughest time becoming judges in the Biden administration.
A study was done a little while ago on the federal judiciary. I wish we had these studies for all other appointments by the Biden administration. And apparently his first 2 years, President Biden had appointed 97 federal judges. Of the 97 federal judges, I was expecting maybe 25 or 30 were white guys, because I know President Biden wasn't heavy on appointing more white guys. Five of the 97 judges were white guys. Of those, two were gay. So almost impossible for a white guy who's not gay, apparently, to get appointed here.
It is almost impossible for white guys not gay to get appointed to federal judgeships in the 2.5 years or so that Joe Biden has been president. What a house of horrors it's been for white guys who clearly have been oppressed in this instance, because they've only had, you know, the first 200 plus years to get nearly all of the appointments to judgeships until more people in elected office discovered that there are more people in our population than straight white guys. But leave it to Glenn Grothman to call out President Biden and say, gotcha. How dare you not be appointing straight white guys to federal judgeships? Well, anyway, for the low income housing reasons and others, Glenn Grothman is on the fence about the debt ceiling deal, as are many members of the Wisconsin congressional delegation. They're not exactly rushing to embrace it. And nobody's really expecting them to, because again, to get a deal means that people don't get everything that they want. And as a result, you've got people like Democratic Congresswoman Gwen Moore, Democratic Congressman Mark Bocan, who are unhappy with some of the cuts that are in there, with the potential for the cuts to be even deeper. Republicans who are saying that the cuts aren't enough. There are some times when it's true that if everyone is mad at you, you must be doing something right. I think that probably fits in this example, that there's something in there that everybody dislikes. It's not always true. So I don't want to use it as a cliche. There are times when everybody hates something and therefore we should really look at it again, because there might be something wrong with it. But that's not the case this time. Congressman Derek Van Orden from the 3rd District is trying to say that it's not the worst possible thing, and that there are those on the extremes who are, you know, who are taking this and treating it more negatively than they should, because again, that's what this is positioning on the part of Derek Van Orden. On Friday, he met with farmers in the Chippewa Valley from Chippewa, Eau Claire, and Dunn counties. A story from Chris Vetter in the Eau Claire Leader Telegram talks about how after the discussion, he had more than 20 pages of notes. And he said, these notes go back with me to Washington and go to congressional staff. But no offense to the congressman, I know exactly what committee staff is going to do with his notes. They've been experts on ag policy for years, while they see Van Orden as a potentially one-and-done freshman who only got his seat on the ag committee as a way to potentially boost his credibility to win a second term. This is a guy who's been treating trashing immigration as a priority, not the kind of thing that necessarily sits well in a dairy industry now very reliant on immigrant labor. Let's take a break and then start our weekly climate check feature with Melissa Baldoff. And we are talking this week. We're going back a few months to a very cold winter, but not nearly cold enough thanks to climate change and not nearly as much ice cover on the Great Lakes as usual. That's after this. You're up north. We're back on Up North News Radio on a Wednesday morning where Melissa Baldoff joins us for our weekly climate check. Melissa, how are you?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
Well, doing great, but I'm telling you, this should be the first day that I run the air conditioner here in the house on a Tuesday afternoon. It's pushing 85 here, but it's such a nice fresh breeze after a long winter. I just don't have the heart to do it. And somehow or another, we're going to have to talk about this past winter as we do this week's climate check. So you suggested, and I thought it was a great story when I looked at it, talking about the Great Lakes over the winter and one likely side effect from a changing climate is the amount of ice cover that's on the Great Lakes. And it, of course, it varies. These are massive bodies of water. But the numbers this past winter were troubling or alarming, depending on your point of view. What did you make of the story? What did people see and what are they reading into it, Melissa?
I think, well, that's a great question, but I'm first going to tell you, I am right there with you on trying to keep windows open. I am just such a sucker for fresh air coming through the house. So that is actually a little argument that Joe and I have sometimes is he runs hot. He's wanting the air on sooner than I am and wanting the heat on later than I am. But I'm always trying to keep windows open if I can.
Well, again, because we can, because those winters are so, they're so long.
Right. They are. And anytime you get that fresh air, it's just, it's amazing.
That's right.
But onto the waters, onto our Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. What was really interesting to me about this story and is that it just highlights the extremes and that is such the impact of climate change. You know, for so long, people were just talking about this is global warming. And isn't it better that it's a little bit warmer? And, you know, if you're a Senator Ron Johnson, you're saying, hey, this is great for Wisconsin. Don't we want it to be a little warmer in the winter? Well, no, we don't. We don't want these extreme fluctuations. Those are really bad. So that's, I think, one of the things we're seeing so much with climate change is just these really extremes from year to year, these fluctuations. And so, you know, this year we've got this, you know, average ice cover.
Fourth lowest that they've been measuring for over a half a century. The exact number I've got in front of me here, the average ice cover over the Great Lakes over the past 50 years is about 25% ice cover. This past winter, 6%. Right. It's not good.
Right. And that's such a big fluctuation. And then you couple that with, you know, we had some periods of really heavy, wet snow throughout the late part of winter, and then a warmer April. So then you've got this massive melt, that has led to the historic flooding in the upper Mississippi area over the spring. And it really, you know, gets to, like I said, those extremes that people can't plan for, because it's not like you know what you're getting every year. If some years you're getting this record low and some years you're getting a record high, it's so much more difficult to plan. And, you know, you've got these other negatives. We talked about the algal blooms that we're seeing. And, you know, not only is that something that doesn't look so good when you're out on a lake, but that's really disruptive to the ecosystem and to the food ecosystem too. So, you know, it's just causing, the extremes are really causing a lot of problems for everyone who relies on our waters for whatever reason, whether it's for recreation, whether it's for food, whether it's for tourism, for travel, for transport. It's causing a lot of problems for a lot of us.
A lot of us here in different parts of the state, but especially here in West Central Wisconsin, we're quite familiar with how bad the algae can be blooming in Tainter Lake by Menominee, whether that's how much of that was, you know, decades of farm runoff, and was it, you know, other now lawn fertilizers and everything else. It still continues to be a problem there, but and we've seen it certainly in other bodies of water. I see it here on Lake Wissota. But what was so troubling about the Great Lakes, and a story that we've run on Up North News a couple of times, is it hadn't been seen previously in spots of Lake Superior farther from the Duluth Superior port, where, again, you would expect some contamination there, but these algae blooms are being found farther out. And again, that is a big red flag for the health of the lakes, and then, of course, the ecosystem around it.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I know, in some areas, you really do want those colder waters are helpful for part of the year for the health of the ecosystem. So it's really disruptive to everything when we've got these, you know, wild fluctuations happening that people can't plan for, and you just don't know, you know, you never know what you're going to get, and that's not a great thing.
Yeah, I want to give credit to Caitlin Luby from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who was one of the reporters that put something together about this and talking about how, you know, the lake water will mix every spring as the surface water warms up. It frees up nutrients that, you know, become available to phytoplankton. And all of these things allow the lake to stay healthy. And when it doesn't, when it affects, you know, the food web, it's going to also affect things like, you know, like the weather, for example, that, you know, a warmer lake level is going to lead to a changing climate in areas of land. So these are things. You start with the ice cover, and again, don't, for the love of all things holy people, don't rely on the year-to-year fluctuation, because next year it could fluctuate again. And again, Ron Johnson could use it as a punchline. You look at the past five decades, the numbers are clear that this is something we should be paying attention to.
I absolutely agree, and I appreciate you shouting out Caitlin and her coverage of, you know, this particular story, and you know, the coverage that we're seeing about the Great Lakes in general. I think it's so important for people to understand the impact, because our waterways, you know, we're bordered on three sides of the state by these waters that are so vital to our economy, to our way of life, and it's so important for people to understand that what is happening to our climate is happening to these waterways, and that impacts our livelihood. So I really applaud Caitlin and the other journalists who are out there covering these issues in a way that is very relatable and understandable, because these can be some difficult to understand issues. You know, not all of us, not all of us are scientists, and it's so important that people understand what the impacts are. And I really applaud the efforts to make this a topic that people can understand and relate to.
And look, Melissa, when we talk about a changing climate, there's certainly a lot of people talk about greenhouse gases and, you know, over a century of automobile use and factories and everything else. And that all has an impact. But let's switch gears to something that has a more immediate impact. And that is, again, you don't have to dump truckloads of waste into the Great Lakes to have an impact, but you can certainly muck up with an M. You can certainly muck up the wetlands and things that the tributaries, everything that feeds into the Great Lakes Basin. And that was made a lot easier for polluters to do by that decision we've talked about late last week by the U.S. Supreme Court, that essentially was a wink and a nod to polluters, developers, what have you, that say, you know, it's going to be so much easier now in many states to fill in wetlands. And it seems like a classic anti-science point of view of not understanding what wetlands are. They're not just some bog that's an inconvenience for you.
Exactly. You know, and I think it really is a devastating ruling. It is just one more step towards dismantling the Clean Water Act entirely, which is what a whole bunch of Republicans want to see. They don't want to have any kind of regulations. And ones like this are so critically important. You know, it really ties the hands of the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers that these developers can drain and pollute at will. And that, like you said, it's that lack of understanding about how important our wetlands are. You know, they are like sponges, right? They filter pollutants out of the waters. They help mitigate flooding. They absorb excess water before it gets to rivers and lakes. It's really important to have, strong protections for our wetlands, which we do have in Wisconsin. We do have state protections, which is great. And that could always change though. And certainly if that were the will of Republicans in the legislature to dismantle those protections, they'd certainly try. Thankfully, we have Governor Evers in there, the governor's office, to do everything he can to protect our wetlands, our lakes and rivers, and our environment. But it is dangerous still for Wisconsin, even with our state protections, that we lose that federal protection. It is just one more step towards getting rid of the Clean Water Act entirely.
And I think one of the reasons we want to emphasize it on programs like this is that it is so easy for many on the right to take these cheap shots, like we've talked about Ron Johnson saying, oh, it's global warming would be a good thing. And similarly, I've talked about the ridiculousness of an argument that says, well, why should we protect a wetland if you can't even float a canoe on it most of the time? And the U.S. Supreme Court completely buys into this, pro-business logic by saying that if the wetland is not immediately contiguous to the larger body of water, then the EPA can no longer regulate that, which tells me that when the EPA was formed, the scientists understood the value of wetlands that aren't always wet year round, but still have value to the nearby, if not directly attached, body of water. So when people on the right bring up these punchlines, I think it's good that people remind them that we're kind of onto them, that they're making some lame jokes that can do some real damage.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like I said, when you think about them like a sponge, does anyone want to wash their dishes with a moldy, grimy, dirty, dingy sponge? Would you feel good about eating your meal off of your plate if you had a dirty sponge? And you wouldn't, So I think it is that kind of lowest common denominator on the other side sometimes, where it's ignoring science, making the cheap shot jokes, when you've got, people out there joking around like, oh, well, the right, well, the, the left just wants to criminalize cow farts and these absurd arguments. No, what we want to do is keep our environment clean and healthy and safe. Nobody wants to disrupt our producers and our farmers or be hostile to business and development. We need that. We need development. We need to have a robust agriculture economy, but we need to do it in a way that is safe and clean for everybody.
I want to end with one note that I just noticed that former California governor and actor Arnold Schwarzenegger said on CBS Sunday Morning over the weekend. And it really struck a chord with me because it's something that I've been saying, and I'm not going to put myself on the same, level as Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he makes this point that says that climate change itself has become such a hot button topic in politics that he said, in his mind, it ought to simply be rephrased as the word pollution, that pollution disrupts the climate, pollution kills. And I just looked at that and said, wow, I thought I was the only one. I'm like, why are we politicizing this? Isn't it bad to pollute anyway? Wouldn't we want to reduce that anyway, no matter what you think the larger impact is? It just seems to stand on its own. And I guess I happen to think that was a good move by Schwarzenegger. Because it doesn't matter what you call it, right?
Point. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that, I think that more Republicans would do well to listen to what he has to say. And not just him, but, some of the other folks who maybe are not currently in office, but can take that more moderate approach to conversation. And not just even moderate, just, let's just acknowledge science. That shouldn't be a controversial approach to politics and conversation, to just acknowledge science, acknowledge what the facts are, and go from there. If people want to have a debate on the way that you solve pollution best, then let's do that. But let's everybody agree that what the facts are, the facts, and the science is the science, and pollution is a major problem. And I appreciate that there are at least some reasonable Republicans who want to have that conversation, because we need everybody to be a part of this solution. Everyone caused the problem over decades and decades and generations. So we really need everyone to come together to develop the solutions that will help address these problems too.
Exactly. Melissa Baldoff, thanks as always. We'll talk to you next week. All right. And we will have coming up in just a second, our regular history lesson and music break. A lot of birthdays in the almanac today. That's coming up next. You're up north.
How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white
dove sail? Of course, is Peter, Paul, and Mary as we mark the birthday of Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary. Born this day in 1938, 85 years ago. Peter Yarrow was not just part of that famous folk trio, but he was also equally well known, and surprisingly did not win any major awards for singing at a campaign event in 2012 in Wausau for then congressional candidate Pat Kreitlum. Aaron, I'm really shocked that more accolades didn't come his way when he did that for me.
You know, I would have thought so, but
the story behind that is that Peter Yarrow got to know Congressman Dave Obie, and Congressman Obie played a mean harmonica, and he and Peter Yarrow got to know one another, and every so often, Peter and Congressman Obie would make appearances together, and you know, Peter would play guitar and Dave Obie would play his harmonica. And one day while I was running for Congress in 2012, you know, the congressman calls up and says, hey, Peter Yarrow's coming to town. He's going to do something to play at your office for supporters. I'm like, sure, bring it on. It was a unique little insight into some musical history.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
That
you had a musical, legend appearing for you. So many birthdays. I've got to break the list in half here. Let me get through a few of them. Clint Eastwood is 93 years old today. Super Bowl winning quarterback Joe Namath is 80. Led Zeppelin drummer John Bonham was born this day in 1948, passed away in 1980. Actor Chris Elliott from Schitt's Creek is 63. Actress Leah Thompson from the Back to the Future movies is 62. Singer Corey Hart, who we played earlier, is 61 today. And Daryl DMC McDaniels of Run DMC, rapper, producer, he is 59 years old today. Again, another 1964 birthday, born just days ahead of me. And again, way more famous than I could ever hope to be. The number one song on this day in 1980 was by a group called Lip Sync. All right, let's get back to the birthdays here. Brooke Shields, the actress and model, is 58 today. Actor Colin Farrell is 47. Andy Hurley is 43 years old today. The Menominee Falls native is the drummer for the band Fall Out Boy. And singer-songwriter Azalea Banks is 32 years old today. On this day in music history, in 1983, after taking a break, the Talking Heads members David Byrne and Jerry Harrison went off and released solo albums. Chris France and Tina Wyma formed the Tom Tom Club. But in 1983, they got back together, recorded their fifth album, Speaking in Tongues, containing this, their biggest hit, Burning Down the House.
Watch out. You might get what you're after. Cool babies. Strange but not a stranger. I'm an orphan.
This is an anniversary for Big Ben, the clock tower at the Houses of Parliament in London. It began keeping time this day in 1859. And one more music history note, it was on this day in 1986 that Genesis entered the Hot 100 with Invisible Touch. I'll tell you its historical significance in a second here. I don't know how many of you think of Genesis as a super group, but they do qualify when you look at how at this point in 1986, not only was Genesis on the charts, but four current or former members of the group were on the chart as well. Phil Collins, Mike Rutherford, Peter Gabriel, and Steve Hackett. 50 Cent began a four-week run at the top of the charts with his second single, 21 Questions, on this day 20 years ago, 2003. And on this day in 2014, Michael Jackson posthumously became the first artist to score top 10 hits in five consecutive decades when Love Never Felt So Good hit number 9. All right, yesterday we played Rock the Casbah by The Clash. We talked about the birthday of drummer Topper Hedden, and we noted that it was his birthday. What we didn't note was that on Rock the Casbah, he recorded essentially all the instruments on this song by himself, initially as a demo track to sell the rest of the band on the song. And once he played it for them, they decided they wanted to keep the energy of his original demo takes. And so you're hearing basically a one-man band here, Aaron, while you're listening to the song.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I looked up some videos about it, him talking about it, and he just sat down at the keyboard and he's like, yeah, I just kind of sat down and played this. And then they liked it. And that's really all there was to it.
There
Except
you go.
For one other note, the main difference is in the lyrics. He originally wrote it about being sad and missing his ex-girlfriend, but the rest of the band thought that was pretty lame.
I do like the storyline better. However, they ended up rewriting it. Mark from Prairie to Stack wants to join us to continue our conversation about Wetlands. Before Mark jumps in here, a reminder, we do give away Brewers tickets in this time period from time to time. And next week, Monday and Tuesday, we will be giving away tickets to next week, Wednesday evening's game. So stick around for that. Mark, good morning.
Yeah, well, first off, it's interesting hearing Glenn Grossman talk about marriage from a confirmed bachelor, like Glenn Grossman.
Yes, he's all about their, you know, single moms are just there's something wrong with them in his mind. He talks about that all the time. True.
Yeah, and as far as for Wetlands, I can remember there's a little wetland down here. It's actually a waterfall production area, which is probably an area where the farmer decided the drain tiles just weren't doing enough job on it to keep it producing, that, you know, to keep it productive. But I can remember driving by there every day. I drove by there every day for a while there. That I can remember one year I counted 14 different species of waterfall on it, just driving by it one morning. And that year there was three broods of ruddy ducks on this little tiny postage stamp wetland down here in Dane County. I mean, that are just basically, you know, the tag end of a flooded farm field. It shows mm-hmm. just how important some of those can be. I can remember and this is far northern Wisconsin, but I can remember a bottom of the sand pit. There was a pond there that we used to go fishing around in. Plenty of dragonfly larvae, dobsonfly larvae. And it was actually not connected to a little trout stream tributary that was, you know, 50 yards away from it, but it probably was connected via the groundwater. And I can remember brook trout running up that little rivulet in the fall when it was all grouse hunting, you know, when they're spawning, when the brook trout were spawning. So don't give me this crap. There's no connection between these things.
No, not at all. You know, it is all connected, Mark. Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that call.
Thanks, brother.
And yeah, have a great day. And again, just that reminder, there is a connection. If it's not on the surface, it may be below the surface. And even if it's not necessarily there, there is always a connection. More in our next hour. You're up north.